All right, we're going to finish up Judges chapter 8 and get into Judges chapter 9. If you go ahead and turn to Judges chapter 8, we got a few more verses to cover, a couple of closing thoughts, and then we'll jump into Judges chapter 9. We've spent longer here than I normally never want to spend more than 3 weeks on a single chapter, but I've had a lot of good discussion going on, and so hopefully our time here has been well spent. But we are definitely finishing up and getting into chapter 9 this morning. Before we begin, we'll kind of get ourselves recentered with a word of prayer. Brother Tommy, if you'll lead us in that place. We left off Mr. Gideon last week where he came back victorious against the Midianites. And upon getting back, we look at several of the things that the people sought to make him a king and instill somewhat of this dynasty within Israel. He turned that down and says, "You've got a king, the Lord is your king." But then he proceeded to do a bunch of things that a king would do. So we're not real sure. We're sure about his answer, but we're not sure about his motive. He took some of the royal crescent items from the Midianite kings. He took their clothing. He asked for some tribute from all of the people, an earring, and he built this ephod that ended up, we find out, causing the children of Israel to fall away. So let's conclude Gideon's story this morning in chapter 8, verses 29 through 35. Brother Pierce, would you mind reading that text, chapter 8, verses 29 through the end of the chapter?
Gideon, the son of Joash, died in good old age and was buried in the sepulcher of Joash, his father, in Ophrah of the Abizarites. And it came to pass as soon as Gideon was dead that the children of Israel turned again and went whoring after Balaam and made Baalath their god. And the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God, who had delivered them out of the hands of all the enemies on every side. Neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, namely Gideon, accordingly to the goodness which he had shown unto Israel.
All right, this is going to really segue perfectly into chapter 9, so we'll have a couple of more questions to ask and a few observations to make about this text. Once again, I've written this Gideon as a terrible guy trying too long. So we come here and we find out that Gideon fathered 70 sons, says he had a number of wives. I'm not going to make just a whole lot of a comment on that. But we do notice here the narrator bringing back to the forefront of our mind, and this is something I need to keep in mind as well, that Gideon did a lot of great things for Israel. Gideon delivered them in a moment of crisis when there wasn't apparently another leader that was willing to step up. And although he had his challenges along the way, he did deliver God's people. And as has been mentioned, he's found in Hebrews chapter 11 in that hall of faith, where those who've demonstrated exemplary faith, their stories are brought to the forefront of our mind. And so he's praised by God here. It's said here that Israel, after Gideon died, they went after other gods again, as we've seen this cycle of sin, this downward spiral of sin that they've been participating in. As soon as Gideon's gone, that restraining factor's been removed. It says they go after another god, Baal Berith. And a very significant statement in verse 34 where it says they didn't remember the Lord who had delivered them, and they didn't show kindness to the household of Gideon in accordance with all of the good that he had done. So a couple of questions, and we'll close chapter 8. Despite doing a lot of good things, Gideon made some bad choices along the way. And I think there's lessons for that for all of us as well. It's, you know, we make good choices and we try to be good people, but sometimes we make mistakes. And I think perhaps Gideon was an individual that succumbed to some of those. What do you believe to help us avoid making some of the mistakes Gideon did? What do you think was at some of the root of what caused a lot of his problem?
Let himself get in the way sometimes.
Very good, himself. Dave?
Okay.
Yep, and I think Buster's saying the same thing. So two votes for pride, and I'd cast a third vote in there as well. I think that's at the center of what's causing a lot of his mistakes. Miss Johnny?
Well, too, he grew up with a lot of evil influences around him. And I think that with that, he was surrounded by people that were trying to be good, which was an accomplishment in that day and time. But he had a lot of evil influences while growing up.
Okay. And we live in a world that's full of evil influences, too. But we want to avoid making the same mistakes that Gideon made. So, Johnny?
I was just going to say, I think that this is told for our benefits, you know. And even if you look at the kings, Jehoshaphat listed as one of the good kings, and he made some pretty bad mistakes, bad decisions. Even one of the greatest kings, Hezekiah, let pride get in his way.
Pride comes before fall, and we're going to see some significant consequences that are going to have come about from some of Gideon's decisions in chapter 9. Brother Tommy?
Yeah, I agree with Johnny and everybody else too. But it'd be just like us today. If you find yourself in a position where you have a little bit of power or a little bit more money or a little bit more prestige for whatever reason, regardless of how we try to be, things like that will affect us. And sometimes
we, like Buster said, we can be our own worst enemy sometimes. I think pride was at the heart of a lot of the mistakes that Gideon made. When do you think that perhaps that might first have reared its head? I've got my own opinion. When did you first start seeing signs that this guy's kind of let some of this go to his head?
For me, it was more than all the gold.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I think it was instilled. So it might have shown up later, but it was just part of the family history.
I think it's probably in all of us, and we do it. We each suppress it to a different degree. But I think very, very few people are born without probably having to struggle with this, because if you think about it, pride is one of those sins that really. It really lays at the root of almost every other sin. Any time we choose to sin, it's because we've decided this is what I want for me. And that's really what pride is. It's a self-centeredness, and we get in our own way. And it's something that we all probably possess to varying degrees, and it's our job as Christians to suppress that, to be humble, and to put others above ourselves. Miss Johnny? Oh, good. I have a friend. Right. Later on, he kind of makes that correction in his statement. The Lord is your king. He says, this is the Lord. Should have said, this is the Lord's victory. But I'm kind of like you, Mr. Johnny. I think that's where things, I first noticed it, where he says, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. And this was all God's doing. This was God defeating 135,000 of his enemies with 300 men. Gideon had absolutely nothing to do with this other than he was the man that shouted. He was the man that kind of communicated between God and the soldiers. So that's where I personally noticed it, and I noticed it in several other places where he seeks out revenge for personal reasons. Remember Succoth and Penuel, where he said, you taunted me, and that's why you're getting this punishment. And to those two kings, he said, if you wouldn't have killed my brothers, I wouldn't have killed you. He started making it personal, and I believe it goes all the way back to a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. That's my thoughts only. Anyone else want to comment on that? All right, and I'm going to completely stay out of this question because I've spoken my opinion too much. Do you believe that Gideon was a good man that made mistakes or a wicked man that was partially obedient?
Yes. I think Gideon was a good man. I believe it was a good man. He wasn't able to do that, but it was a good man. I think he did.
There's plenty of people in the Bible. They're not, you know, they're...
He's holding him up there before us. It's a man of
faith. He's holding up his faith.
Yes. And so I think he's a good man.
Well, you're all wrong, because Jesus says there's no one good but God, so there. Trick, that's not... Well, there were. I think there were two prodigal sons. Well, we put that term on there. You know, the story of the prodigal son. Those little headings were inserted by the people that put our Bibles together. So, all right. Any other closing comments on Gideon? He's an example for us all. He's a good example, and he's a bad example. And that's most of the people that we have in Scripture. And you're right, Johnny. You know, we see even the greatest make them mistakes, and God doesn't hide that from us. And it's a bit comforting, because I think we can be a little bit overwhelmed by some of these people and wonder, well, what in the world would I do in a situation like that? But then we see them falling flat on their face sometimes, too. Been guilty of that. Dick, do you want to say something? It ended up being a snare to God's people, the same way that the idols had previously. So he kind of went full circle there. And so we just need to remember, learn from his mistakes and imitate his good example of faith. So there's the lesson for us for Gideon. Steve? He had a significant amount of hurdles to overcome, probably more than most of us do. I don't know the last time that I've risked my life to serve the Lord, and he was commanded to tear down that idol of Baal and Asherah. And, you know, that almost cost him his life. And so, you know, he had a lot to overcome, but he was willing to do so in faith and step up and be the guy that they needed to deliver, God needed to deliver the people. We're never at a point where we don't need the help of others and the encouragement of others. You're right, and I think Gideon demonstrates that in his obedience and his failures. Very lifelike, very relatable to us. I think in my outline of the judges, I labeled Gideon under the weakness of God's salvation. And the whole reason Gideon was chosen was because I think, as Steve mentioned and Dave mentioned, he was a weak individual. And God demonstrates his strength. And I think that's what we're to see, that the man isn't brought to the forefront. God's brought to the forefront. And that's why a weak man like Gideon was used. Because if God would have used a Samson, you know, this guy that's powerful and goes just killing 1,000 people as an individual, you have a tendency to look at the man and say, wow. But he used a man that was frightened and fearful, and God demonstrates his own strength through weakness. And what was it Paul said? You know, when I am weak, then I'm strong. And it's only when we realize that we're weak and that I'm helpless, I can do nothing, that we turn to God, and that's where we find strength to be strong. Buster, were you going to make a comment?
Well, at his death now, was Israel not on the right path with God at his death? You jump back to 33, it said after he died, they turned again and went a horn. So were they on the right path at his death?
Well, I don't believe so. Verse 27 says that they played the snare with the harp.
Yeah,
with the right, the ephod that Gideon made had been a snare. I think that's two different things. Some of the commentators believe the ephod Gideon made was like an idol, but the ephod, remember, that was the high priestly garment that was used as a divine means of communication. And so what Gideon made was the ephod, and I don't think it was like a Baal where they would have bowed down at the statue, but rather I think it was something that in Gideon's pride he built perhaps as a means of I will be the spokesman for God rather than the high priest who was to don the breastplate. And so in that way he led the people into sin, not necessarily into idolatry, but into looking in the wrong places for God. And there's a lesson about the importance of following the pattern, you know, that's to be made there. God gave the pattern for the ephod. Gideon broke from the pattern because he thought it was a good idea. I don't think he led the people into idolatry. They fall after Buster, like you say. They fall away after Gideon died into idolatry. But they were definitely operating in an unauthorized way. Tommy?
Yeah, I think you see the same problem today in some of the so-called churches around the different denominations. You know, they think they're serving God, but they change the pattern, like you said, the correct pattern. And even though their hearts may be in the right place, they're doing the wrong things, and it's, you know, it's not acceptable. It's false worship.
Well, and yep, and that's what we see, that break from the pattern led Israel into harlotry. And harlotry is simply serving another god, and this time it seemed to be the god of pride. All right, let's, somebody else going to make a comment?
Some of the commentaries on that ephod thing say that the priesthood had become so corrupt at this time that it could be that Gideon was trying to correct some of that, and he just went about it in the wrong way.
Right. Exactly.
That's the problem we have today with all the different beliefs and everything. You know, when you try to correct something, and you just go off in a different direction.
And we set out with good intentions too, don't we? So oftentimes, and I don't necessarily think it was perhaps Gideon's intentions that led him astray, but it was his break from what God had commanded. And so that's what James is saying, and I agree with him. It was a break from what God had commanded. All right, let's jump into chapter 9. If you haven't got the questions for those, we're going to have a few of them today. We've got 15 minutes left, so you can either grab them in the back or you can grab them off the internet if that's your preference. You may notice if you grab the notes section in the back, I break the chapter down into usually 3, 4, 5 parts. However the chapter itself reads, I try to kind of keep it contextually together several of the verses to look at them in various groups. You may notice if you grab those notes that this time for the different breakdowns, and I think I broke the chapter down into 5 or 6 portions, you have there a summary kind of at the top of the notes of what each verse, kind of the highlight of each verse. So I'm going to start leaving those empty. I just kind of put those in there for anybody that likes that kind of thing, likes to have a little extra for the note taking. You can, as we break the verses down, you can write what is the main event of said verses. And I put that in there this time, but next time I'll leave those blank for you to fill in yourself, get you thinking a little more about the text. Okay, we've got a major shift here in the narrative. We need to ask the question, why has it been written? We get over here as the story of the judges is unfolding, and he's just going bam, 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 one judge right after the other. And we find out about Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, and Gideon. And he's just told about this cycle where they're perpetually in sin. And so you'd expect after Gideon dies for him to continue on, as he had in other cases. You know, the children of Israel are punished by God. He sends an enemy to enslave them and to make their life hard. They cry out in anguish, and then God raises up another deliverer. But we've got a major break in our narrative, and so we need to stop for a moment and ask, why is that there? And that's our first question, because that's what the entirety of chapter 9 is about. It's a complete break from the way the author has been writing. As we see here, somewhat of, maybe we think, well, the author's going after a rabbit trail. I think he's does this very intentionally. And so let's consider this idea. Why do you think the story of Abimelech was inserted into the book of Judges? Not just that it's for our benefit, but as it pertains to what we know about the text and what's been said and what the author's trying to communicate. Why do we have this story here? Dave? I think that's good. Actions have consequences, and God wants us to see that. Anybody else? Okay, that's a major source of.
I disagree with Dave. I agree with what Dave said.
Yeah, I jotted down several things. You go back to 8:34, and you find out one of the things that happened, they forgot God. And remember, we talked about it this morning in our lesson, what it means to know God, and similarly what it means to forget God. To forget God is not to have this cognitive knowledge of my parents taught me about God. To forget God is to not obey God. And that's what happened with the children of Israel, is that they disobeyed God. They forgot about God in the sense that they went back after the idols. And also there's a strong connection between chapter 9 and Abimelech and everything that comes about because of that. In verse 35, because it says that the children of Israel did not show Gideon kindness because of everything, all of the good that he had done for them. And that's going to come back and pay them back. Miss Johnny?
Well, I think it also shows the difference in leadership. Here, Abimelech is saying, such a wicked man.
Amen. Gideon leaves us some good and some bad. Abimelech pretty much just leaves us with some bad, doesn't he, to learn? Tommy? Okay. Well, I guess, it seems like my question probably was confusing, and I can see that. This wouldn't be the first confusing question that I probably asked. I think there's a strong connection drawn between the people forgot God, and the Holy Spirit wants to show this is what happens when you forget God. And so we read this long story about all of the consequences. I think there's a very strong tie between the ingratitude on behalf of the people and the result of what happens, because not only is Abimelech, who is the result of a harlot, we're going to find out, come into the story, but there's other people that suffer on behalf of his actions as well. And God's, in a sense, judging these people because they didn't show gratitude to Gideon for what he would done. Can you think of any other consequences of illegitimate children? Johnny brought that point up, and when we start reading, we find out Abimelech was the son of a harlot. Can you think of any other consequences of illegitimate children that were born? Who's that? Solomon?
Solomon.
Okay. Okay. Solomon was kind of a two-edged sword. He was good and he was bad too, like many of the others we read about. A couple that come to mind for me is Ishmael, you know, the Hagar and Abraham, and the product of that child, where Sarah kind of steps in and says, hey, let's help God out a little bit. You take my handmaiden, Hagar, and you conceive the son of promise. That'll be how the son of promise is delivered. We'll help God out a little bit. And the result of that, the Ishmaelites, a.k.a. the Midianites, that were a thorn in Israel's side, product of an illegitimate relationship. Dave?
Of all the things in the Bible that I don't guess I'll ever understand in my life, is how that was allowed.
Lamech's the first one I think that comes to mind as a polygamist. I'm not going to try to answer that. I can't answer that, you know. But if I were to, I've rationalized the same thing in my mind as well. Why did God tolerate that? And I guess I'd go back to Matthew 19, where it's the same thing with divorce. It wasn't God's intention. And God simply said, because of the hardness of your heart, you know, Moses permitted you to write a certificate of divorce. But from the beginning, it was not so. I guess I'd kind of go back the same way. It was something God tolerated, but it was not something that God wanted. And it gets to the point in the New Testament where he says, one man, one woman for life. That's what my intention was under the new law. That's what it's going to be. And so while God might have permitted it, it definitely wasn't something that was pleasing to him. And I think we see that in sometimes, oftentimes, illegitimate children are, you look at it, Jacob and Leah and Rachel, it's a product of just the domestic trouble that takes place when you try to deviate from what God's original intentions were. Danny? Maybe it goes back to the Acts 17 statement. The times of ignorance, God is overlooked. You know.
In David's case, as counted, I believe it cost him four sons. One died in the youth because of his iniquity. And Abathar, Absalom, and was it Ammon? Is
that the one? Amnon, killed by Absalom. You think, and maybe God's thinking and hoping, maybe these dummies will figure it out. They know the history. They know what happens when a man takes more than one wife. You know, the children are punished and the family suffer and there's strife and unrest. Maybe they'll catch on. And finally, they never do. And he gets to the New Testament and says, no more. No more. It's for your own good. John? Let me ask a question for John. What would be worse, the multiple wife problem or the multiple mother-in-law problem? Yeah. So you learned, Dave. Tommy?
Yeah, even as far back in Deuteronomy chapter 17, in verse 17, he tells him that they're talking about, you know, once you get you a king, you know, he's predicting, you know, all these things will happen. He said, neither shall he multiply wives to himself. So he had a warning there.
That's true. I forgot about that passage, but you're right. God warned him about the danger of that. And that's one of the things that was just going to come along with the kings. Solomon, case study. All right, let me ask this question real quick. Was Abimelech a judge of Israel?
No, not really.
Okay, he wasn't. I don't know about you, and Bible class teachers, listen up. Whenever I was taught the judges, Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Abimelech. You read this guy's story, he is not a judge. The judges were deliverers. This guy's a murderer. He's a thorn in Israel's side. And so when you look at it from that approach, and nowhere is he identified as any of the others are as being a deliverer for Israel. That's what the judges did. Rather, what he does is he delivers the people up, and he causes all kind of trouble for them. So Abimelech was not a judge. I've That really throws me off to have to memorize that list now all over again, because it's just burnt into my brain. Abimelech is a judge. He comes after Gideon. Dick?
Some versions of the Bible list him as a king.
Mm-hmm.
Because they act like they took him and made him a king.
God warned about... God warned about the danger. And one of the things we'll want to remember, just so we don't miss the forest with the trees, these judges, there is some overlap. And you'll remember, Israel, you've got them on both sides of the Jordan. You look at your map, you've got the three tribes, or two and a half tribes on the east, and the other nine on the west. They're operating almost autonomously. And what a king would do is a king would bring them all together, make them stronger, and make them a nation again. And kind of like you saw the conflict between Ephraim and Manasseh last time, where the men of Ephraim go to Gideon and they're griping at him, hey, why didn't you tell us that you were going to enlist our aid in battle? And they kind of jump down his throat for that. And, each tribe seemed almost to operate autonomously. And the tribes on the other side, back I guess when it was Deborah, they were called to battle. But it says several of the tribes were just ambivalent. And they really didn't care because they were so caught up in what they were doing as their own individual tribe. And so a king, yes, would unite that, but doesn't seem to be God's purpose and God's intention, at least at this point in time. And whenever they try to break, once again, God's pattern, you shall not have a king. I'm your king. You see Abimelech as a result of that. Well, Tommy, were you going to comment?
Yeah.
Shechem. Shechem. Right, not in the sense that Saul or David or Solomon or any of those were. He didn't reign over Israel nationally, but he did over the city of Shechem. That's going to be the town that's involved where he's called king, if you will. One last quick question before we ring the bell. Does anybody know what the name Abimelech means? My father is king. The king came from the mouth of the guy that said, God is your king. Names the child of his relationship with the harlot, my father is king. So, anyway, there you have that. All right, we'll pick up more on Abimelech's story next week, chapter 9. So, kind of just take an overview whenever we get to that point. We're going to look at some of the main places and some of the main characters, just so we can keep the big picture in mind as we're reading through this chapter. But we'll see there, and I'll talk a little bit more about the relationship I believe that this story has and why the narrator decided to break from his normal pattern to include this story about this man who wasn't judged but that tried to be king. So thank everybody for their participation in our class this morning.